This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So can you start by telling us, just start at the beginning, how you first found out about the trial and what the process was that you went through to understand what would be involved?
Hi, everyone. Well, I didn't really have a chance to really be the first person to learn about the trial. I was when I was in the ICU, I had a head injury, so I didn't really know what was going on, and I wasn't very coherent. So my parents first learned about the trial, and I think they had the misconception of thinking that this was actual therapy and that I would have these stem cells injected and I'd get up and start walking. And so once I came to, I'd say a week later, post-injury, the first thing that I was told was that, oh, hey, so there's this trial and you're going to participate in it and, you know, they're going to fix you. And so that was the first thing that I heard. Then as I sort of came out of, you know, that drug haze that I was in, I got to speak to Dr. McKenna and the other doctors at my rehab at Santa Clara Valley, and that's when I learned that it's not, this isn't it, this isn't the therapy, that this is just a phase one trial that's aiming at seeing if there's any adverse effects. And that was a little bit disappointing, since I had first been told that this was the cure, but I just sort of had to really wrap my head around it and decide whether I wanted to participate in something that wouldn't benefit me.
Did they have any resources available to help you understand? Like, did you even know what a phase one trial was? Had you heard about phase one or two or any of that? And did you use the internet? Did you talk to your doctors? What resources were most helpful to you?
Right. I should actually mention that I didn't really even know what stem cells were. I think I'd heard it maybe like just the term itself once or twice, just about the fact that it's controversial and whatnot. I didn't really know what they were, especially embryonic stem cells. And so I did ask a lot of questions. I met with Dr. McKenna several times, and he had to really break it down for me and explain it to me in very simple terms that I could understand, because I mean, this wasn't something that I dealt with in my normal life, and I had to learn all this new medical jargon that I'd never heard of before. And so asking questions and having it explained in the most elementary way possible, that was very, very helpful. And it helped me understand what it was really that I was getting myself into. But also, one of the things that really was reassuring to me and sort of sealed the deal for me was being able to speak to the neurosurgeon who was going to perform the surgery, Dr. Gary Steinberg, just because going through the whole process of signing the consent form, it's stressful enough. So knowing that you're in good hands and the person who's going to perform the surgery knows what they're doing, that's, you know, one thing not to stress over, since everything else is incredibly stressful. But I had a great team behind me, and I went into it fully informed. I did my own research. I had access to a computer, the internet, and I definitely did as much research as I possibly could, even though a lot of what I found I didn't necessarily understand reading it myself. But I tried to ask as many questions as I could so that I would be able to understand what it was that I was consenting to.
You've said that you get contacted quite a bit by other people considering clinical trials and that you give advice to them. Can you tell me what kind of advice you give? And then also, what kind of advice could someone have given you that might have made it easier to understand?
Sure. I had the opportunity to meet with and speak to the fourth patient who had these stem cells injected right before me, I think a month and a half before me. And that was very reassuring, even though, you know, there was nothing that he could really explain to me that hadn't already been explained in more medical terms, in fact. It was just comforting to see him in person, see that he was doing okay and that he had gone through it with no complications. So that was one thing that really stuck out and at the moment. And when I do have others who contact me, whether, you know, in person or through social network, I really look back to when I had the opportunity to speak to the patient before me, and I feel like it's sort of, I feel obligated to pay it forward and tell others and guide them in the right direction as much as I can. But I do have a lot of, especially young people who, once they find out that I was part of this trial, they don't really know about the trial. They just think that I got these stem cells. And so one of the first things that they ask me, they're like, oh, so what did it do? Did it work? I'm going to go get stem cells done too. And they always say it like that, that they're going to go get stem cells done. Right. Like it's a nose job. They're going to go get it done. And I always think, yeah, no, that's not, that doesn't work. Yeah. And it's always like, oh yeah, you know, next month I'm going to Peru or I'm going to somewhere in Russia and, you know, this or that. And I try to tell them that, you know, that I don't have any expertise in overseas type stuff like that. But what I was a part of was a clinical trial, and that, no, I did not necessarily regain some sort of drastic function that I can, you know, tell you about. But that it was, you know, that it was a phase one trial, and I try to explain it to them what the phases are and how it works and how you don't expect to see any personal benefit in the first phase. But what just recently happened was that I had a gentleman who contacted me, and he was asking questions because he wanted to know what my experience was like, because he wanted to participate in the Switzerland trials. And he was actually one of the people who didn't come up to me and just ask, oh, did you get stem cells done? I want to get stem cells done. He actually knew what he was talking about. He had done his research. He had specific questions that he was asking me, and I was more than happy to answer them. And one of the things that he asked me was, oh, what did you ask? What were the questions that you asked your team of doctors and, you know, the neurosurgeon or this person or that person? And, you know, I told him I asked this type of question, and, you know, I got this type of response. But what I really wanted him to understand was that the real question is the one that he has to ask himself. Why does he want to participate in the trial? And I told him that when I made the decision, and I didn't make the decision until like the night before or even the day of, when I made my decision, I did it strictly because I wanted to help the future generations. I didn't want, you know, I didn't think that I'd have these stem cells injected and walk the next day. That was absolutely not even, that was in my mindset at all. But I knew that I wanted to help others, and I was looking at the bigger picture. And that's what I told him. I said, look at the bigger picture. Is this something that you want to do to help the field, or is this something that you want to do for selfish reasons? Because if you do, then you'll end up being disappointed, and that's an awful feeling, because I've experienced that over the past year, you know, feeling regret, feeling disappointment, asking myself whether I made the right choice. And it's really difficult. That's probably one of the most difficult aspects of it, is mentally it's a lot to deal with. It's a lot of questions that you ask yourself and you don't know the answers to, because, you know, you can't go back and change things. You can't do it differently. But what I have come in terms with is that I made the right choice, and if I had to do it all over again, I would probably make the exact same decision that I made a year ago, just because I feel like I'm a part of something that's bigger than me, or bigger than everyone in this room. And so I think for me, mentally, it's put me in a better place than I probably would be right now, just because I have a lot of downtime, I have a lot of time to kind of do the whole self-pity thing. And once that's all over, you know, I think of what I'm fighting for and what I've been a part of, and that sort of keeps me going and helps me push forward.
It sounds like you were about as educated as a person can be in a short period of time before going into this, and yet it sounds like you still did feel some regret later on and a bit of disappointment. And I'm just curious, what kinds of things did you regret, or what kinds of things were you disappointed in? And is there anything else that, you know, in setting up these clinics, the people here could be sure they're educating people about so that they minimize the amount of regret or disappointment that they go through?
I think one of the main questions that I had even before I signed the consent form was, is this something that's going to either put a stop or slow down my natural recovery? That was something that I asked you several times. I think I asked every single person that I met, because it was important to me, because I didn't want the natural recovery to be halted just because I'm deciding to help the field. And once I really understood my type of injury and how severe it was, and just kind of the statistics of it, that not too many people regain too much function back with the type of injury that I had, I was able to accept it a little bit more. Although, like I said, months later, I still asked myself if I made the right decision and if I halted any recovery. But ultimately, what I ended up telling myself and what I ended up understanding was that had I gained something back that I don't have right now, it would have probably been, let's say, one more level. I would have maybe been like a T6 instead of a T5, or I would have maybe been able to move one of my toes. And those aren't things that really have much value to me. They don't add to my quality of life, and I really don't know what I would do with one more level or just one moving toe. And so to compare that with what I have instead been a part of, consenting to participating in the trial, it's so much bigger. And like I said, just looking at the bigger picture, moving my big toe isn't as important as having been able to participate in the trial and give something back and hopefully move the field forward. I don't remember what else you were asking.
Part of participating in the trial, obviously, is the medical care you got. But then you also got an enormous amount of support for your family, for follow-up appointments, dealing with insurance. Can you talk about some of that additional support that people need when they're going through this kind of incredible trial?
Of course. My parents were, like I said, all for the trial in the beginning, until they found out, or until I told them, explained for them that this is not to benefit me. Then they were suddenly all against it, and they wanted me to have nothing to do with it. But I told them that, you know, I needed their support, and that I just wanted them to, you know, stand behind me and just go with whatever decision it was that I made, and that, you know, I wanted to make the final decision. But it's a lengthy and it's a difficult process. I think, as you guys were looking at it earlier, there was a slide where it had all those MRI dates that I've gone through all of them now. Finally, I had my last one yesterday. I think that was my 10th MRI in a year. It's a lot of work. I've had to actually travel a lot for it as well, since I ended up moving to Southern California halfway throughout the whole trial thing. And it's really important to have family support and to have support from, I guess, you know, whoever is behind the whole organizing all the dates where you're supposed to come back, and, you know, who's going to pay for your travel expenses, who's going to pay for the hotel and the rental car and this and that. It's costly. It's takes a lot of effort and takes a lot of time, but I definitely knew that I wanted to go all the way and do it till, you know, the whole 15 years that they're supposed to follow me. I didn't want to just, you know, give up halfway just because I was moving 300-400 miles away. But yeah, definitely having the support of the hospital, everyone there, and my parents, it's been incredibly helpful.
What was insurance like?
I actually, it was interesting. I think you guys were speaking about this earlier, if I understood it right. When I was first injured, I had applied to get my own insurance, but it hadn't gone through yet. So at the time of my accident, I didn't have insurance, and I didn't qualify for Medi-Cal either. So it was a very difficult situation where my parents wanted me to come to Valley Medical and to qualify for this trial, but I wasn't able to be admitted because I didn't have insurance. And even the insurance that I did eventually end up getting, it was out of network. That was difficult, but you know, that was something that I had to, for a while, fight with my insurance with, and eventually sort of, you know, come to some kind of terms. But I did definitely have that issue where I didn't know if I could even make it to Valley Medical to go through the qualification process.
In the past year, you've become quite an advocate for spinal cord injury, for clinical trials, for getting improved care and for people with disabilities. And I'm curious if you can talk about that a bit and why it's so important to you, instead of just going back to school and getting on with your life, that you'd be such an advocate.
I had the opportunity to meet with Roman Reed, and he is he's a huge advocate in the spinal cord injury world, and he's sort of kind of the reason why I ended up being able to get the stem cells that I did. And meeting him, I think a couple months after my injury, it had a huge impact on me. Just learning about everything that he has done and the impact that he has made, it really inspired me to sort of go in the same direction and take notes. And really, it's unfortunate there aren't too many of us. There aren't too many people who advocate for a cure. I think most people with spinal cord injuries, I don't know, they either hide, or when they're out, they, you know, seem happy-go-lucky. So people think, oh, well, you know, you're in a chair, but that's okay. You know, you can't walk, but that's okay. But, you know, that's not what it's about. It's so much more than walking. And I always say that walking for me is so low on my list of priorities, I don't even think about it much. But there are so many other bladder, bowel dysfunctions that those are the things that are important to me. And those are the things that I think people fail to talk about. And it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't just be tossed aside so that all people see is the whole walking issue. And that's one of the reasons why I do advocate for stem cell treatment, stem cell research, is because I want those things, like those bladder, bowel function type things, I want those out of the way. I don't necessarily advocate for walking or you know, something like that, but I feel like it's important because there aren't, first of all, that many of us who advocate for it, and secondly, you know, I've been through it all, and I feel like I have some knowledge in the area where I can you know, talk about it and inform others and hopefully make some sort of a difference.
Do you want to add anything before we open it up to questions from the audience?
Not really. I mean, I think one of the keys for this is that, Katie's a very articulate young woman who's, you know, would have been through a lot just to deal with a spinal cord injury. And I think that her advocacy in the realm of stem cells is broadly applicable. So even as you think about, you know, what your particular field is, I would encourage you to ask questions and think about how, you know, being at the cutting edge of being in one of these invasive clinical trials and really living a life with stem cells, how does that, you know, how can Katie inform that process for you? Because she really is one of the first people who's been in this process and can provide us a lot of information.
Questions from the audience?
So first, fantastic courage, and it's great. Just explaining how you explained the whole thing was fantastic to hear from the patient perspective. And also interesting, the informed consent aspect. Because you don't think about, you have all the procedures in place for informed consent, but if you informally mention it to a relative, they just take it however much you say, they'll take it as, oh, this is going to be the cure. Mm. So I think that's a lesson maybe for us in informed consent, is to be set up to inform the patient and not get pre-expectations higher. And if you could have gone back and been informed directly without having the feeling that it was going to cure you, would that have helped a little bit at the beginning of the process?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
You were told, first of all, oh, this is going to be a cure, and then you learned from Dr. McKenna that it wasn't. So if you could have gone back and first heard that, no, it's not going to be a cure, it's just a step, would that have helped a little bit at the beginning? And is that something we could do better for future trials?
Well, I think the main issue was a language barrier. My parents don't speak spectacular English, and this is, you know, like I said, it's all the medical jargon that, I mean, normal people don't even understand. So it was just a lot of miscommunication between, I guess, my original neurosurgeon who did my surgery and my parents. And I don't think it would have made a difference had I been immediately told that this is a phase one trial and it's not supposed to benefit you, because I never really got my hopes up all that much anyway, and I never knew for sure if I could even qualify to participate. So even if it was a cure, I still didn't know if I qualified to receive the stem cells. So I didn't really go in with any expectations. And so when I was told by Dr. McKenna that it's a phase one trial, I wasn't really disappointed. I just decided to, you know, just ask more questions and understand it a little bit better before I sign the consent form.
Yeah, I also iterate, the courage is incredible. Actually, kind of a specific question. In terms of the information that you received and how much of it that you were told and discussed with impacted you versus how much that you independently researched really impacted your decision?
Well, I remember we had a whole day where they brought out the consent form, which was quite long, and my doctor, he actually had a baby shower to go to, his wife's baby shower, and poor guy, he ended up spending hours and hours explaining every little detail to me. And of course, all those little details, I still had questions, and I don't even know if he made it to the baby shower, because I had so many questions, and it was a very long process going through everything in the consent form. But that was definitely helpful, really understanding what was said in there, what the risks were, and you know, all the things that I had to do after the injection. So that was one part of it, and that was very helpful. But I did definitely do my own research and try to understand as much as I could before really doing something that, you know, I could have potentially regretted, I guess. But it was everything that I researched. I took notes. I came back. I asked questions to make it a little bit simpler for me to understand. And it was just helpful to have it sort of broken down and into more elementary, you know, vocabulary that I was able to first of all, understand myself and then be able to explain to my parents as well, who were obviously very concerned and wanted to know that this was a safe procedure. I wouldn't have horribly adverse effects. And, you know, of course, their opinion mattered to me because they'd be the one taking care of me if anything bad was to happen. I don't know if I answered your question.
I think we probably have time for one more question.
Sure.
Hi, Katie. I'm Bettina Steffen, one of the science officers at CIRM. Thank you for being here. Did you wish you had some tools to help you talk to your parents? You're very smart and could read all this on the internet and, you know, think about it. Did you wish you had tools or things to help you talk to your parents?
Well, we actually, Dr. McKenna and I, had a day where we had a translator call in, and I had my whole family kind of sitting around, and he would explain to the translator, and the translator would try to explain it to my parents. It actually didn't go as well as we thought it would. There were still some language barriers, so I ended up sort of playing translator myself, and so I'd have Dr. McKenna explain everything to me, and I would explain it then to my parents, not only in simpler terms, even simpler than what he was telling me, but also in a different language. But definitely having that whole day where we all sat around and tried to really break it down for every one of us to understand what I was signing into was very helpful. But I don't think there was any other way to make it easier. Thankfully, I'm able to speak both languages fluently, so I was able to explain everything to my parents as best as I personally understood it. So,
okay, well, thank you. And so I would like
Ken, I did want to add just one other comment on top of that. You know, the informed consent process is several days sort of in the making for getting into a clinical trial like this. But one of the other network effects that I think ended up being very valuable as a clinician explaining some of the details of this was to be able to have one of the other patients living in the area and being able to come back and talk. And this is something that we're all going to see sort of as this field progresses, that there's a phalanx of people who've received stem cells now, human embryonic stem cells, who, by and large, I've been very impressed by. There's an amazing sense of motivation and camaraderie and ties and a sense of advocacy. And being able to facilitate that as a tool to the last question, to be able to communicate with people who've been through this, because it only means so much if I explain something to somebody, but if another patient who's been through it explains it, that's going to be a very valuable tool, I think, going into the future.
Now, okay. So I'd like to have everybody thank Amy and Dr. McKenna, and most especially Katie, for doing this today.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.